Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake. Once again, I don't think I remind you guys enough the importance of subscribing, rating, and reviewing. So I'm taking this opportunity. Please do so. Helps us out a lot. 5 stars only. As always, I'm joined by Matt. And Posey, my cat, is in the room right now. So you might hear a little background noise. But
hey, well, good for her. I haven't heard her yet, so.
Yeah, she's messing with my 49ers beanie baby right now, which I've spent lots of money on toys for her, and her favorite thing is my beanie baby, like my little 49ers beanie baby. So
sounds about right.
Yeah. Also want to apologize. Last week I was super sick, sore throat, couldn't talk at all. So apologize for missing last week. And Matt, in the spirit of live reaction on the podcast, guess what happened to me today?
Oh, you got in a car accident.
No.
Okay, that's good. That makes me happy.
So you know how my ankle's broken?
I do. Yes, I do know that.
So I went Saturday. I had an MRI because it wasn't healing like at all, and went back to the doctors today, and they said it's a significant injury. There's ligaments that are completely torn, and one bone was completely fractured. Another one was significantly shattered, or one was shattered completely, one was fractured significantly was the term. It was hard to listen. It was a lot of information, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
So here's what's gonna happen. I have to go see another guy, but the two options are basically they're gonna draw blood out of my arm and then inject it into, like, spin it out so it's just the plasma, and then inject it into my ankle, or surgery is the other option.
Did they say how likely the plasma thing is to work?
It sounded like that. They said that was the quote-unquote more conservative option.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I knew that was more conservative. Did they seem to be pointing you towards one option or the other?
No, because I have to go see another doctor who's like an ankle specialist or whatever.
And, yeah.
I honestly was like shocked it was that bad, so I didn't really have the headspace to ask questions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, when you were here, you didn't, like, I know you weren't exercising, but you weren't limping.
No, it doesn't hurt. Like, it'll, once or twice a day, it'll shoot up and be pretty painful. But
yeah,
if I'm just walking around, it doesn't hurt, like, at all. But it's also, I can feel it's there, and I cannot do anything more than walk. Like, I can't run at all. I can't even do jumping jacks. So biking's the only cardio I can do, and I'm getting very sick of it.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I can imagine.
I didn't think it was that bad though, because it's not overly painful.
Yeah, that's a remind. What did you do to hurt it again?
So I was playing softball. It's the dumbest thing, and I overran third base because I didn't want to slide and like cut my leg up, and then coming back, my cleat got stuck in the ground and my leg kept going, and there was a huge crack, and I just like kind of fell down right away. And that's why I just thought it was broken, because I heard the crack, and the original x-ray just caught the crack. But then I had to go back because it was like 2 months ago, and it's still not better.
Yeah, that is a bummer. But yeah, not what I was expecting to hear, but At least you're here. You can let it out on the podcast, relax over some sports.
Other than that, it's been a great Monday.
Well, that's good. That's nice.
And so that's what's going on in my life. And here's what we're going Here's what we're going to talk about today. College football playoff came in, so we'll talk about that. Coaching changes are going on. Transfer season's going on. We're going to talk about some of that stuff. Talk about some soccer. But we're going to start with, I'd say, the most entertaining story the last couple weeks. And it's older news, but some news came out today from the league, from the NBA. So we're justified in talking about it right now. But it was the James Harden non-dunk. I don't know if there's a better name for it. But, and Matt, you saw it. I'm sure most of the listeners saw it. A game against the Spurs. The Rockets were up 13 at the time. James Harden dunked the ball. It, like, hit him on the shoulder and, like, bounced back up. So the refs just assumed it didn't go in. Rockets were furious because it obviously did go in. but they were so mad that they didn't challenge it because they only have a 30-second window to challenge calls. And then the Spurs ended up coming back and going winning in double overtime. So the Rockets were protesting the league saying they should either give the Rockets a win because they outscored the Spurs in regulation or replay the last 7:50 of the game. And the NBA is like, obviously, we're not doing that. So it's, for me, it's just more of the Rockets being the Rockets.
Right. Yeah. No, there is obviously it was the wrong call. It does not bother me for I think three reasons is what I had in my mind. The first was is that if there's anybody in the world in any sport who I don't feel bad about for the refs missing a call, it's James Harden. You know, I've just watched him travel too many times to really feel bad for him. The second is your point is that they could have challenged. They had 30 seconds to challenge. Nobody told them they couldn't challenge, and then they didn't. So I don't understand why they're complaining. If they understood the rule, they knew they had 30 seconds. Like, I don't know what the problem is. And then B, you're up 13. Just hold on to your 13-point lead.
Yeah. Just don't screw up, which the Rockets did multiple times in that game. And right. Why would the NBA fix it? Like, obviously they screwed up, and that's a pretty bad no call, but that happens all the time. And I try to be unbiased, but I hate the Rockets because, one, James Harden is unwatchable. Two, they're the beneficiaries of so much stuff like that. Then when something doesn't go their way, they complain more than anybody else in the entire league. They make it a whole thing. And no one wants, no one feels bad for you.
No, I can't stand the Rockets. So it was fun. It was a weird, I've never seen a dunk like roll out of the net like that. Like, it was just a weird play.
The refs credit watching it live, which I wasn't watching it live, but like when they slow the replay down and like zoom in, and it's obvious that it was a dunk, but watching it live and like from the ref's angle, what the ball did was weird, so I don't blame them not calling it, like saying it wasn't a basket. But we both said Rockets could have challenged it. They didn't. So instead of just being mad and complaining, use the rule change that is this year. So the 1 year, like, you could have challenged it and it would have been fine. You didn't even do it, you know?
Right.
It's like one of those things where, like, if it happened last year, people would be saying, well, that's part of the reason the NBA created challenges was for that no dunk situation last year. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even challenge it. So zero sympathy for the Rockets. All I think is more of a humorous slash kind of annoying situation more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, like, and who, like, yeah, like, who honestly is going to feel bad for James Harden, you know? Just, like, I remember last year when he played the Jazz in particular, obviously because we're Jazz fans. But, like, that one shot where he did kind of a sidestep to the right, but he didn't get as much separation from Rubio as he wanted, so he just took another two steps and they didn't call it.
Yeah. It happens that all the time. Literally stuff like that all the time.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, and then it didn't, I don't think it actually influenced the impact of the game. Like, if they're up that much, it's hard to really think that if the Spurs were going to come back by 13, they couldn't just come back 15.
Yeah. No, if you're that much time left in the game, that big of a lead, hold on to it. Like, it's your own fault. Matt, there's one other thing we need to talk about that I didn't mention that I just remembered before we go into the college football and soccer and the other stuff.
Okay.
It is the article that I wrote that you edited that's coming out tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Let's do talk about
it. And then we'll talk about the editing thing because there's one other thing we need to edit. We can do that off the air. But general premise, do you want to talk about the article, what's coming out for the good folks tomorrow on mjdoubletake.com?
Yeah. So basically the premise is that everybody in the world besides Jake Cowden, Pete Carroll, and is it Matt Blevins?
Who's offensive coordinator?
Okay, yeah. So those three people are the only three people who think that the Seahawks made the right call, even though it ended on the interception. And in this article, Jake is going to tell you why passing was the right decision. And I'll let you read about it when it comes out tomorrow. But basically, it has to do with timeouts, how much time was left on the clock, you know, delay of game penalties or lack thereof. And I gotta say, you make some very interesting points. I've believed you that it was the right call because you know more about football than me. But actually being able to read it, it's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And now if I wanted to have that discussion, I could like defend that position to somebody else.
Yeah, because you know Pete Carroll's not an idiot; he's a smart guy. So I talked about why I rewatched that last Seahawks drive tens of. Again, I don't want to say hundreds, but it honestly feels like maybe 100 times I've watched that last drive and watching this article with the timeouts, the way Seattle used their timeouts, with the clock management, with, again, what passing does to the clock versus what running does to the clock and how it affects play calling on future downs, why that was the right call. I will give credit to Mina Kimes, ESPN. She also thinks passing was the right call. She's literally the only other media person who I've heard defend Seattle. She is a Seahawks fan, to be fair, but.
Right. I mean, I will say when I hear, and I'm not just saying this because you're my brother, but when I think about the people in the national media who I really feel like know as much about football as you do, it's, you know, pretty much former players, probably Trey Wingo, Chris Berman's, and then Mina Kimes is on that list for sure. Like, she is really, really smart.
She is really smart. Really good at her job. And, yeah, I mean, not to brag, but, I mean, Matt, you know, I just watch a lot of football, and I played a lot of football growing up, and I wish it was something else, but I just understand how football works pretty well, I think.
Yeah. Everybody's got their thing.
So check it out. Again, we're recording this Monday night. I'm putting the article up tomorrow at work. So there's a small chance you listen to this before the article comes out, but it'll be up Tuesday, December 10th, mjdoubletake.com. Again, I've wanted to write it for years, and I finally got down to it. It's why Seattle made the right call in throwing the ball on that fateful fourth down play.
Yep. Check it out. It's good stuff.
And great job, Matt, editing it. Matt, let's talk about some college football stuff. Let's talk about – let's do first Heisman, then some notable coaching changes. And then we'll do college football playoff and other bowl games if we need to. Does that work?
Yeah, okay. Let's do it.
So Heisman finalists are quarterback. There's four of them. Quarterback Joe Burrow from LSU, Oklahoma quarterback Jalen Hurts, and Ohio State teammates quarterback Justin Fields and defensive end Chase Young. And really, I think Justin Fields is the best player in the country, but he's not winning the award. It's going to be Joe Burrow. The big drama is if he can break Troy Smith's mark for biggest margin of victory or biggest percentage of votes. Troy Smith, Matt, you remember him, the quarterback of Ohio State, on that really good Ohio State team that got the brakes beaten off him by Florida in the national championship.
Oh, yeah, that was a weird year.
Yeah, he had a 91 – he got 91.63% of the Heisman votes. Or like first place votes, or like points available, because they do it like first place gets X amount of points, and then second place vote gets X amount of points, and third place gets X amount of points. He had 91% of the total points available, and that's the biggest margin. So Joe Burrow has a chance to get 92. Again, Justin Fields is a better quarterback, but no one listens to me for some reason. I haven't figured out why yet.
Right. Well, it's not really. In these kinds of awards, and I mean, I've said this, I feel like individual awards are stupid. I feel like if you're helping your team win, that's the most important thing, and so we shouldn't reward people for filling a different role. For example, you know, for the University of Utah, they don't need Tyler Huntley, or they don't even want Tyler Huntley to throw the ball as much because they're trying to give it to Zach Moss, so we shouldn't punish Tyler Huntley. Obviously, I don't think he's in the same league as any of these guys. I will say, though, that, you know, even though Justin Fields may be a better quarterback, you know, the award, I think, is about who's had the better year. What do you think? Do you think that it's about the best player, or do you think it's about who's had the best year? And do you think it should be about which one of those do you think it should be?
You know, I honestly think unless Well, I was going to say, unless you're a running back who has an outstanding year, but Jonathan Taylor isn't even a finalist, so we'll come back to that. But for the most part, it's become best quarterback on the best team award, which I don't think was its intention. I think it's supposed to be the most outstanding player. And then the criteria also talks about off-the-field stuff as well. Basically, like excelling in off-field stuff as well as being the most outstanding player in the country. And in its history, it used to be a lot of running. It was mostly running backs and quarterbacks. Last defensive player to win it was Charles Woodson in 1999. And I don't get why it's only quarterbacks. I get that they add the most value or like add the most points expected. But most outstanding player, that could be Chase Young. And I'm glad he's at least a finalist because he's been the best player in college football, the defensive end from Ohio State. Even though I've Justin Fields biased. I think he's the best player in Ohio State. I think he's the best player in the country. But Chase Young has been the most dominant player in the country. So if he hadn't gone suspended, I would maybe give him my first place vote that I don't have to Chase Young. But Joe Burrow has been unbelievable. He's completing like 76, 78% of his passes, just smashing records at LSU in terms of efficiency, completion percentage, everything like that. And LSU is dominating people. And when you're a quarterback in the SEC on the number one team in the country, you have a really good shot at winning the Heisman. And I don't really have that big of an argument with that philosophy, because if you're the quarterback of an undefeated team in the SEC, you have to be pretty good. And Joe Burrow's been spectacular this year. But I do wish there's a way. Like, Jonathan Taylor rushed for 1,900 yards and 21 touchdowns this year, and he's not even a finalist. You know? Like, I just wish there was a way to get him more involved. Then the problem is there's a lot of deserving players and they can only bring three. So it's never going to be a perfect system. There's always going to be complaints, like, because I would say Jonathan Taylor should have gone in, and people can say, okay, well, who would you replace with out of those four? And I would want to say Jalen Hurts, but he's been pretty spectacular, especially the early half of the season for Oklahoma. All right. Matt's back. We had some technical difficulties over there. But we're back in business talking about, again, the Heisman stuff, Jonathan Taylor. And, man, I honestly wonder if Wisconsin had not lost to Illinois, if Jonathan Taylor would be a finalist, because he was getting Heisman hype and then they lost to Illinois and then no one started talking about him, but he still kept having such a spectacular year.
Yeah, I mean, losing to Illinois will definitely do that to you.
I am shocked they had that loss.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, they would still have three losses, two if you don't count the conference championship to Ohio State, which honestly you probably shouldn't, particularly if he had a good game against Ohio State there. But who was their third loss?
Ohio State in the regular season.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, lose to Ohio State twice, and then, you know, you have kind of a fluky game. And that's another flaw with this college football system, is just that there's no room for error. And I think it's fair to expect a Boise State or a Central Florida to just not have an off game. But I would like for the playoff to be big enough that a Wisconsin can lose to an Illinois in a fluky game, and they would still be able to compete for the playoff. You know, not two of those games, but, you know, I think one of them you should be allowed.
Yeah, well, I think by 2024, that's when the TV deal's up. It's going to be at eight teams is the way it seems to be headed. So you got to hold on a little bit, but it does look like it's going that way.
Yeah. But to your point, though, I don't know. I mean, I just think Joe Burrow has had such a good year. And I just feel like if you lose to Ohio State twice and Ohio State's got two players who are going to be Heisman finalists, then I think it's hard for you, you know, to end up being a Heisman finalist when you've lost to that team twice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and Oklahoma State running back Chuba Hubbard is, last I checked, I might be wrong, but he was at one point at least the number one rusher in the entire country. And he really didn't even get talked about at all because Oklahoma State went 5-4 in the Big 12.
Yeah. They went 5-4 in the Big 12.
Yeah, there's a four-way tie for fourth because I was writing something about Texas, so I checked this out. So Texas, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Kansas State all went 5-4 in the Big 12.
That is insane. I haven't even heard of something like that.
Yeah, so Oklahoma, obviously, they were at the top, then Baylor was right below them. And then big drop to 5-4. And then how many teams is that? So TCU, West Virginia, and Kansas were below that. So 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Who's the 10th team? Oh, Texas Tech was below that as well. So there's a four-way tie for third, and then the drop all the way to 7th place in the Big 12.
That is nuts.
Yeah, college football is wild, man.
Yeah.
Speaking of wild, let's talk about some head coaches change, because it sucks. This is like my least favorite part of college football, and I get it has to be like this with recruiting and everything like that, but literally like the day after the season, sometimes during the conference championship games, like these group of five schools are playing for a conference championship, and then like literally right after that, their coach is going to – like Mike Norvell at Memphis went to Florida State, or Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic went to Ole Miss. And it just sucks for those group of five kids. You know, like you're good and your coach is out the door, and it's just part of the deal going to one of those schools.
Right. Yeah. No, it does suck. Cause like, and then it feels like if he's going to leave, then like, you're just not going to be able to do as good next year. Like it feels like impossible. Like how are you supposed to build something if next year you can't build off that momentum? You've got to put in a new system. Like that would be just really frustrating, and it makes it hard to recruit because all those new recruits who you had got excited about joining your team and they felt like, you know, you maybe overreached on some recruits that you were excited about, all of a sudden probably 80 to 90% of those kids are going to decommit.
Yeah, and it sucks. You look at UCF, Scott Frost left after that undefeated year. Josh Heupel came in, and they went undefeated again. But the year 200, Josh Heupel, they had three conference losses, if I'm not mistaken. Another loss, Cincinnati. They at least had two, but I'm pretty sure they had three losses. And you can just see like kind of that. Oh, sorry, they had three total losses, but only two conference losses. Well, let me just check that, because I know they lost to Pitt and then Cincinnati. But my point is, like, you can see kind of that foundation cracking. Cincinnati went UCF went 9-3, two conference losses. And so they're just back to being a normal group of five team, and it sucks because you can't build anything at those schools. And, like, Houston, yeah. Ed Oliver, the right now Bills defensive tackle, he was the number four player in the entire country, and he went to Houston because Tom Herman was there. And then 1 year later, Tom Herman goes to Texas, and Ed Oliver can't go with him. You know what I mean? So the number four player in the entire country is playing at Houston, you know? And, like, those schools, yeah, if they had sustainability, if they had longevity, I think UCF or Houston could be on par. Houston definitely, because they have the money and they have the recruiting base, could be on par with a lot. Like, Houston could be, like, the third best team in the Big 12. Because they have that much money, but they just can't, because coaches are just going to keep coming in and out if they're good. And if they stay at Houston, that means they're not good enough for a Power 5 job. So it sucks for Houston, but that's just kind of the world of college football.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do with that. It just...
Life's a bummer, you know? Let me sit though, Matt, and then we'll go on to the talking of the college football playoff. $20 says you don't know who I'm going to say so far is the best hire, new head coaching hire in the country.
I would agree. I don't think you're going to say Lane Kiffin.
No, but that's the most exciting one. That's the funniest one.
Yeah, there's definitely fun stuff always follows Lane Kiffin. It's a shame that he got hidden away in Florida Atlantic for so long.
Did you hear what you know how he was like kissing kids on the tarmac and stuff?
No, but also does not surprise me.
Yeah, so like he landed in Oxford and like he's literally kissing random babies and stuff on the tarmac. So one of the reporters asked him about it the next day, and he was like, "Well, it's a heck of a lot better than one another tarmac experience I had." That's awesome. Watch Ole Miss next year. But now the best coaching hire so far in the country is South Florida hired Clemson co-offensive coordinator Jeff Scott.
Ooh.
And you know what I don't get?
What's that?
Here's what I don't get, Matt. You know how Nick Saban has so much coaching turnover? Like, I think he had 12 new staff this year, and not just coaches and analysts and stuff like that.
Right, because anybody who was at Alabama is magically going to be a great coach no matter what.
Yeah. Well, Clemson has had the same three coordinators. So defensive coordinator Brett Venables, then offensive co-coordinators Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott. The entire 5 years they've been in the playoff in this run they've had.
Is it possible that they were less interested in leaving than the Alabama assistants? Like, is it possible that Dabo Sweeney is just a funner person than Nick Saban is? I know they want to be a head coach, but I feel like if I was a coordinator, if I was at Alabama, that just seems like a really stressful situation. I might be more willing to take another job as opposed to if I were a coordinator at Clemson, hanging out with Dabo Sweeney, we were starting to out-recruit Alabama. I feel like I would really need a perfect job to be able to leave that.
Well, Brett Venables, he's getting paid just lunacy amounts of money to be the defensive coordinator there, and he's thought to be the best out of those three. So I get why he's not leaving. It's because he's making more money. Like, he's just found the destination job, if you will. He only has to coach the defense, and he just gets paid just stupid amounts of money to do that. The offensive coordinators, though, I think part of it, Matt, I think you're right. I feel like a lot of people go, like Steve Sarkisian went to Alabama, and he's just off the top of my head. But a lot of these guys go to Alabama because they know, like Lane Kiffin, same thing, went to Alabama, get another head coaching job because I worked with Nick Saban. And, yeah, Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott, I just get the vibe that they wanted to be at Clemson and they were only going to leave for the right job, which I'm surprised it wasn't a Power 5 job. But South Florida, it's like Houston. It's like UCF, a huge recruiting base. They should be way better than they are. They've been way better than they are. So I think with the right coach like Jeff Scott, I think they're going to be really successful in the group of five and in the best group of five conference in the American. So I'm interested to see what Clemson does if they promote Tony Elliott to just the offensive coordinator, what happens there. And also Dabo hasn't lost one of these guys ever on the – again, they're the five-time defending ACC champion. Can you think about that? They've won their conference 5 years in a row. How unbelievable is that?
That is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and
you know, it's not like TCU winning the Mountain West over and over again either.
Yeah, and Dabo's had the same coordinators the entire time, so I'm interested to see how that coaching offseason shakes up, and also Clemson in the playoff, because Nick Saban has to deal with it all the time. He kicked Lane Kiffin out between a semifinal and the finals because Lane Kiffin focused on Alabama. You know, like Nick Saban has to deal with that all the time, and I don't think we give him enough credit just because we don't talk about that aspect of what Saban has to deal with. Dabo's never had to do that, so I don't have any expectations, good or bad. I'm just curious to see what happens with it.
Yeah. Now, is he going to stay with Clemson through the playoff?
I hasn't announced it yet from everything that I've read because I was curious about that. What I bet will happen is right now he's in Tampa. I bet he recruits through the early signing day, which is December 12th, if I'm not mistaken, and then which is coming up. Very excited. Speaking of that, we're going to have on our show, there's a offensive line commit, huge recruit named Alex Harrington from Viewmont High School in Centerville, Utah. His top five, it was USC, Nebraska, Oregon, and Utah, or his top four, actually. He's going to come on the show in the next couple of weeks. So, speaking of the early signing day. But, Matt, to answer your question, I bet he recruits through the early signing day, then goes back to Clemson. I bet Tony Elliott gets a lot of his responsibilities ramped up in this month or so that Clemson has to prep for Ohio State. I guess it's only a few weeks because it's the 28th of December.
Yeah. Yeah, so that should be good, man. Bowl season's a great time. It's weird looking at it from the outside and just, you know, these games, they shouldn't seem like they're important. It's just great, but because they're important to the teams, you can tell that while you're watching. So even if it's like the whatever it is that Utah State's playing in, I know they've got like 12 sponsors in their bowl game. But yeah, I know we've only got just a short amount of time until that starts. What do you say, December 12th?
That's early signing day. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's like 3 days before he goes back to Clemson.
Yeah. So, yeah. And again, I just made that up. I don't know what his schedule is, but that's what I imagine something like that is going to happen. Because then the next signing day isn't, there's like a dead period. Then they don't sign again until February. So here's what we should do, Matt. Next week, just teasing future shows, I'm going to make up some bowl games and I'm going to have you pick if what I say is an actual bowl game or something I made up.
Oh, I like that game.
Yeah, so remind me to do that, and we'll get that going next week. We have a couple guests lined up as well, so should have a fun few weeks coming up. But, Matt, let's use that Clemson-Ohio State segue, talk about the two semifinal matchups real quick, and then call it a night. You in?
I'm in. Let's do
it. Okay, so Clemson-Ohio State. I'm excited for this one 100% because, and I tweeted this out earlier, but an Elite 11, Yogi Roth on our podcast, I think it was before we came on the air when he mentioned this, but he's one of the Elite 11 coaches, and he said Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields were both in the 99th percentile of talent that he's seen in all those quarterback camps out of the thousands of quarterbacks that's gone through, and all of them that have gone to the NFL. Like, literally, almost every successful quarterback in college in the NFL, like good top level quarterbacks, almost all of them went to this Elite 11 camp. And those two are the most talented. They're the number one and number two players in the country, not just quarterbacks, but the entire country, the years they came out. I think they're the best two quarterbacks talent wise in the country. Joe Burrow, we talked about, is probably having a better year, but these are the most talented quarterbacks in the country. I think they're the most talented quarterbacks in the last several years. I think in terms of pure talent, Deshaun Watson is probably the last guy who was on these guys' level. So I'm so excited to see that game. I was hoping they'd get a play. And what they're both from nearby each other in Georgia. This is getting into the weeds a little bit, but they're close to each other in Georgia. Justin Fields was committed to Georgia, then went to Ohio State, obviously. But yeah, can't wait for that. I think Clemson's going to win. But I flip-flop a lot on that. It's going to be a close game no matter what happens.
Yeah. If you're a Clemson, you've got to be so angry that you're the 3 seed.
Yeah, well, somebody, Stuart Mandel from The Athletic was tweeting, like, if the main advantage of being the 1 seed is that you don't have to play the 3 seed, maybe we should make the 3 seed the 1 seed.
Okay, that was a lot of numbers. If the main advantage is not playing the 3 seed, the 3 seed should be... I get what he was trying to say.
Yeah, it is a lot of numbers. Basically, he's saying, like, if Clemson's so good that no one wants to play them, maybe they should be the 1 seed. And really, the only reason they're not is because Trevor Lawrence threw 2 interceptions against Georgia Tech and Clemson only beat North Carolina by 1. That's like the only reason. Because they dropped all the way to number 7. The first 3-4 weeks of the season, they were not playing great. And then they've just been on a death tear. They've been killing people. People talked about Utah was averaging 29 points a game in the last 8 games of the season in terms of victory. Clemson was beat everybody by 29 points at least. They dropped 62 on Virginia in their conference championship game.
Yeah. No, it, yeah, and Clemson, and that's why I talked about, like teams like Clemson should be allowed a little bit of margin of error. In the ACC, I feel like all these good teams have, like, are always going to have a weird game, and often it's the same school. This year it wasn't, but, like, how Syracuse has really given Clemson a hard time in the last couple of years. When Florida State was really good a few years ago, it seemed like they always had a problem with NC State, but then, like, they're still, you know, two of the best schools in the country. So that doesn't bother me. Like, I guess it bothered the voters.
Yeah. No, honestly. Well, here's the thing. Again, these kids are 18 to 20, 22. They're going to have off games, and you're not going to beat everybody by 40 points or whatever. So I don't have a problem with them having a close game against Carolina. They would have lost. I think they should have been punished for it, but at the end of the day, they didn't. I think it's unrealistic to expect to beat everybody by that amount of points. And Ohio State, you saw them. They struggled in their conference championship game. They got down by double digits against Wisconsin, and they came back and won. But I think that cost, that combined with LSU just putting it on Georgia, cost Ohio State the number one seed. So we get a team from Ohio and a team from Clemson coming out to Phoenix in the Fiesta Bowl to play. And I don't think I'm going to go because, again, ankle surgery is pretty expensive. But I want to. It'll be a heck of a party that weekend for sure.
Yeah, that I would be shocked if you don't go compared, like, considering all the other games. That would show a lot of restraint.
There's a lot of financial stuff going on. I'm trying to save for grad school. I'm moving into a new apartment, which, if it's the one I want, you have to come down and visit, Matt. It's so nice. It's unbelievable. So we're not in details, but the place I'm thinking of moving in is spectacularly nice. Obviously, a little more expensive, but, you know, trying to be an adult, trying to get the finances in order. You know, that whole thing. You know the struggle.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha. All that stuff we got to... Yeah. Deal with.
Now, let's talk about LSU, Oklahoma. No one's giving Oklahoma much of a chance. I don't feel like I hate LSU, but I feel like I'm always being negative about them. I don't know why, because they've been spectacular all year. I just think Oklahoma has a, I'd say, 30% chance to win, which isn't a whole lot, but I feel like everybody else is like 98% LSU.
Right. Yeah. And that's what, you know, and really, except for that first year, and you're going to remind me, I'm probably forgetting one other year, but the 1-4 matchup has not been very close. The 2-3 matchup is usually exciting, and the 1-4 matchup has really not been one to see. But when the 4 seed has been able to make it interesting, it has tended to be Oklahoma, even if they don't win. In fact, I'm not sure. Has Oklahoma played in the national championship since they've set this playoff?
No, because they lost. Baker Mayfield lost to Georgia in the Rose Bowl. Before that, lost to Clemson in the Orange Bowl. And then last year, Kyler Murray and company lost to Alabama in the Orange Bowl. But I feel like that Clemson game wasn't exactly close. The Georgia game with Baker was a shootout. And Alabama was pouring it on, but Kyler like legitimately almost brought them back, and it was not just one of those things where Alabama let up, but like Kyler Murray was balling out against Alabama and made it a game.
Yeah, no, and that's why I think like it's gonna be fun no matter what. You know, those games are just fun to watch. Oklahoma is able to score against anybody no matter what. And, you know, if there's a quarterback in this playoff who knows how to beat LSU, it's Jalen Hurts, because he's done it before. Obviously, this LSU team is better than the ones he's beaten. But, you know, he's a better quarterback right now than he ever was at Alabama, too. And he's got better weapons right now. Doesn't have as good of a defense, obviously. And that's always going to be Oklahoma's problem in these playoffs. But you know, if they get a couple turnovers, then I don't see any reason they can't win. Yeah,
and you know, stow this away for Aflac trivia in 10 years or something like that. Jalen Hurts is the first quarterback who's going to start for two different teams in the college football playoff: Alabama and Oklahoma, obviously.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like we both think Oklahoma has a chance. Because here's the thing, LSU's defense is not great. Oklahoma's defense isn't great. But I think Lincoln Riley, you give him a month, he can figure out how to score enough points to make it interesting, is kind of just where I'm at. And as good as – it's not really a knock on LSU as much as it's just respect for Lincoln Riley and Oklahoma's offense.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and just when games get that high scoring, then, you know, strange things can happen.
Yeah, it's college football. Weird stuff happens all the time. So let me ask this. So I think I'm going with LSU to win, though. Would you agree with me, LSU? Or are you going with Oklahoma?
Okay. Yes.
Who do you think will win that Clemson Ohio State game?
I'm gonna say I know Ohio State's been really good, but Clemson.
Okay, so we both picking Clemson LSU national championship. Now, before you pick, it's in New Orleans. Who do you think will win? Now that would be a party. That would be a fun weekend because the Saints. It's possible the Saints are hosting a playoff game, like 2 days before the national championship where LSU's in New Orleans. So if there's a place to be, it's New Orleans. That whatever weekend that is,
be a crazy
that would be
game.
A time.
We have to see if the Pelicans.
That'd
play
be a
anybody.
Time and a half. Yeah, maybe it'll be Zion's debut. Honestly, and it's just. New Orleans is sports capital of the world. But yeah, Clemson LSU, who are we taking?
I'm gonna go with Clemson just because I feel like experience is very often helpful in these playoff championship type games. Clemson has that. LSU does not. I know they've got, more seniors than a lot of these other teams are going to have. I just feel like, Dabo and these coordinators have been there for a long time. They know what they're doing. A lot of these players have seen other teams go into the playoff and have success and win national championships where that's going to be new to LSU. So I'm going to go.
Yeah, I'm going Clemson too, Matt. They're the only team in the country. We're not averaging, but just like I talked about, they've beaten opponents every game by 29 points or more. The entire season, they have not given up 21 points in a football game. I think that'll change against LSU. I think LSU's offense is too explosive not to score, but I think they're going to be under 30, and I think Trevor Lawrence can do some damage against LSU's offense. So I think the Ohio State game, because – Ohio State and Clemson are in the top 10, both offensively and defensively in terms of efficiency in the country. I think that's going to be the pseudo national championship, and I think Clemson has a closer game there than they do in the national championship game.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, so what's probably going to happen is Oklahoma beats Ohio State in the national championship, but you heard it here first. Clemson's beating LSU. Again, next week we'll do the bowl game. We need to think of a better name for that, I guess. Week or two, we're going to have, again, Alex Harrington on announce his college commitment, where he's going. And also, I was texting today with the representative from the College Football Playoff Committee. Still up in the air. Don't want to promise anything. But if we can get her on, I would lose my mind. How cool that would be.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I'm
please
begging.
Come on.
So, yeah, not being too pushy with her, but very excited. So, we got some cool stuff coming. The best way for y'all to check it out is subscribe. While you're there, you can give us a 5-star review. Tell us what you like about it. Really appreciate it. Again, remember mjdoubletake.com. That's where the Russell Wilson article is going to be as well. I spent a lot of time on it because I sincerely believe passing was the right thing to do. And I go into a lot of detail, maybe too much detail about why that was, but it was fun writing. So give that a read. And we will, again, barring surgery or me getting weirdly sick again, we'll talk to y'all next week.